Recording. Welcome everybody to the Configuration Persistency Service team meeting for August 21. So we are just gathering here and I think we'll get started. So this past week we had given a presentation at ALA's requirements subcommittee call for R8 Honolulu. Give me a second, actually. I know I uploaded the recording at that point, which I think is probably where people are going to look anyway. So what I did was I created the typical table of contents page. This page is completely empty, and I added in our entry for CNPS with a link to the recording and such. So let me just put a link here to it so people can get to it. And then the architecture subcommittee, also we gave a presentation this past week, which I'm not sure I can get to.
I think Shakar has posted the recording.
Let me see. It should be in the architecture subcommittee.
Yeah, somewhere around there is the link.
Page.
I saw it.
Here, maybe. Let me see. If somebody can find the link faster than I can, by all means, architecture subcommittee. Notes, our meeting notes, I think is maybe here. 2020. 818. Okay, I don't know if the recording is here, but this is where we presented. Oh, here it is. Okay, all right. Okay, so here's the link to that.
Oh, you got to it before me. I pasted it into the chat.
Oh, yeah. All right. Okay, great. And we also have a new member with us. You want to introduce yourself?
Yep. Hi guys, I'm Neve. I joined from Ericsson LMI. Just looking forward to working with you all.
Great. And yeah, how do you pronounce your name again?
Neve.
Neve. Okay. I'm not sure I would have sort of guessed that off the spelling. So it sort of sounds like Neve, right? Did I say that right? Okay.
It's Irish names have a tendency to, not all of them, but a tendency to not be pronounced as you see them written. My personal favorite was when some of our Italian colleagues came over and they were looking for a guy called Seamus and they called him Siamus.
Like that, Seamus seems like a pretty common Irish name, right?
Yeah, it is quite. Yeah. It's.
Or for Aoife, Aoife.
Just being a brute force pronunciation, I would have pronounced that like Nahum or something. Okay, well, great, welcome, and I assume you're in co-located with maybe Tony and Twain.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's see. We had recently been discussing the modeling work. So Jacqueline had presented some basic ideas on modeling. And Neve, you can listen to our past recordings. It's probably a good way to ramp up into the project is just to listen to previous meetings. And also, of course, you came in at a good time because these two recordings have like sort of overviews of the project. And also there should be a link to the DDF, the Design Developer Forum, which gives great overviews of the project as well. last couple of meetings, we've been discussing the modeling, some of the modeling work. So Jacqueline presented and has been on the modeling calls every week discussing some of the modeling ideas to support CNPS in the long term. And last week, I also talked about the 5G service modeling use case. I met with Jacqueline yesterday because we have on the third Thursday of each month. We also discussed that that use case. So we're looking to see how to move that forward. And basically, the use case is talking about sort of the end user of CNPS. So let me just show you quickly what we were talking about. So this is going to be presented on August 31st at the ALLO's call. So you might want to attend that. I'm not going to go into great detail, but let me just jump ahead sort of to the solution. And you can kind of get a sense of what's going on. So basically, you know, all vendors will want to load hundreds of parameters associated with their box. And in addition, there's 288 parameters that are associated with the 5G NRM over many objects. And the standards suggest an object model for your 5G RAN system. Now, of course, there are many other domains, optical, wireline, wireless, and so forth, and that ONAP needs to support as well. And they may each have their own models, right? So Jacqueline has suggested, let's pull in this application model, and this may be evolving as I discussed with her yesterday. but essentially, in design time, you'll have some kind of model that'll get exported in a service CSER package. And then when CNPS starts up, it's gonna have to know essentially, there's gonna have to be eventually some sort of logic that knows I need to create some kind of record associated with this kind of resource. So we were talking about, from a CNPS perspective, what kind of resource do I have, and what kind of data is meaningful? You know, how do I sort of store this data, either through a Yang definition or some sort of schema, hopefully that's pulled in through this NRM. It knows how to create a record. So that's how CNPS is involved, and then there's discussions essentially around how to model that. At the platform information model, what if any of this kind of information is going to be needed on the platform itself? So probably some sort of connector to the resource descriptor, and some ability probably to query the kind of model this thing has. And what I mean by that is, so imagine you're a user of CNPS, that you're some kind of microservice, like the OSON PCI use case. You're gonna have to have some sort of, rather than combing through, you know, thousands of records and maybe perhaps hundreds of parameters within each record, which would be very inefficient. We probably wanna have some sort of maybe domain bit or some sort of classification flag or something so that it can, so that the microservice can sort of index, much like you would, you know, index a set of index cards or some sort of dictionary, so it can jump through to know I'm not interested in this optical, you know, box, or I'm not interested in that, you know, wireline thing. Rather, I just want give me all the PNF, some sort of thing like that. and maybe we don't have this at first, but I think we should probably build in. We should give that some thought at first, because it's going to be where the modeling stuff comes, you know, early. And once you set it in stone, it can be hard to change. So this
is kind of the onboarding flow that you're talking about. So in the SDC, we'll get, mm-hmm. from the SDC, we'll get a CSAR, and within the SDC, CSAR will be some structure to be defined, which ultimately will lead to some Yang models. And then we have microservices that are interested in those Yang models, and those, and we have one in particular, which is our model onboarding one, which looks for Yang models and then determines from the state of those Yang models if they're an IETF or a transport model or a 3GPP compliant model, and provides some metadata that allows for anybody who's interested in those to be able to query that microservice about.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Okay. So that basically, I wasn't necessarily going to go over these slides, but I do have slides on exactly what you just said. So basically, but just for the sake of completeness, I guess, since you brought it up. So when you onboard an actual PNF package, you know, there is some metadata associated with it, which tells you what sort of thing it is. It's a, you know, GNOME B, who provides it and so forth in the Vive version, blah, blah, blah. And it has within it artifacts which have Yang, Yang artifacts. And basically those Yang artifacts, one of those will have the data that CNPS will build records off of. SDC pulls in that package along with those artifacts, and you know, and you can access the actual onboarded artifact.
That's right. It repackages them from the vendor CSR to an internal version of that, the SDC service CSR. That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. Really, Jacqueline and I's discussions yesterday was really about how do we. Once you have, you know, we know that we have these artifacts, and we know in runtime, you're not a microservice isn't necessarily going to just rummage through those artifacts. Rather, I think you're going to create a record within CMPS that for a particular resource. So once you instantiate a resource, and once you instantiate a resource for like a PNF for that resource, to represent that resource, so that, you know, you have a 5G service, it's got PNF 106, you're gonna have an actual record associated with that particular resource. And that's gonna, that resource, that record, that data record is gonna have, basically will have obeyed the fields specified in this artifact, which
should be compliant with the model, yeah.
Yes, right, exactly. So, you know, we're basically thinking ahead a little bit. How does a microservice go through the hundreds, if not thousands, of CMPS records?
And this is really good, because this relates to me in some respects to the concept of the data lake, access control, and model ownership. Mm-hmm. So those things are related. I mean, I would like to be engaged a little bit more in that conversation, because
yeah, sure. You should be invited to the meetings. I think
I am, but yeah. I don't always go because I've got conflicting meetings. In fact, I rarely go because I have a standing meeting at that time on a Thursday. Oh. So unless I know the agenda ahead of time, I typically don't go. Hmm. So I know that's tricky, but
maybe
I have to make prioritizations.
Yeah. I know it's tough.
Sorry, Ben, can I interrupt for one second?
Sure,
I think I'm missing something, or maybe I'm a little bit unclear on the terminology. Mm. Is the intention that every application will have its own model describing itself, basically?
So I think that might depend on the application itself, but imagine you have some, well, let's take a concrete example. So the OFSON PCI use case, for example, right? It wants to know about you know, a certain set of parameters for each PNF. It wants these parameters for each PNF, right? Basically, or a cell. We may have a separate record for a cell as well, right? So it have in the CMPS database, you'll have cell objects, and you'll have cell objects which represent cells, and objects which represent PNFs. So for suppose you have, you know, some base station, some PNF, and it has some parameters like I just showed you, and the cells itself, let me go to the table here. So a cell, for example, you can imagine a PCI value would be one of the parameters here, right? And then you'd have some association that says, I need to, you know, I'm associated with so-and-so cell, and there might be some parameter for this PNF, like a neighbor list or whatever. So there'll be some parameters that it needs, and those are relevant records for that PNF. Now, the microservice, it may have some sort of internal model, but it doesn't. We don't necessarily want to impose that, right? Basically, it'll need to go through each of the, either it stores, you know, I could see it storing, these are the PNFs I'm interested in, and it just locally stores that information, or it's gonna go through all of the records of CMPS and say, I'm interested in these kinds of records, or.
And that depends on the characteristics, I guess.
Yeah, the third thing would be that maybe the CMPS can provide, maybe this isn't something we do right away, but something, maybe CMPS can provide a, give me all the records of, that belong, that are wireless RAN records that are, you know, Ericsson base stations, that kind of thing.
Query.
So to facilitate a sort of at least minimal intelligent query, like we talked about yesterday in the modeling call at the, on the 5G service call, you know, Jacqueline and I were basically discussing how do we build the model, and she's not on the call yet. So how do we build the model to sort of facilitate this really basic, you know, the most fundamental of queries that at the highest level tree is probably going to be, am I a wireless domain record, basically? So, or am I an optical domain record? Or
a large part of this comes to how big a data lake you want to have. So does one service own everything?
Now,
I think that would be a bad idea, but you may have you may have a service for transport nodes, or you may have a service for radio access nodes. In which case those guys would subscribe to the CSAR publication by SDC, and they would query or interrogate the YAMLs, so the Yang models, and determine at that point if they were interested by looking at whatever information was either in the CSAR that described the metadata for that, or within the actual YAML itself that met patterns that it was interested in. And then it would add those to the configuration persistency service, and they would de facto become the owner of any data that related to those XNFs, or that type of XNF. So that's one way to do it, to segregate at a microservice level in terms of the telecom domains that we're interested in.
Okay, so, but except there's a different kind of path too. So yes, that path exists where basically you have a microservice that, you know, that basically takes in the, that takes the service CSAR and knows the things it needs to create and creates all these records and so forth. and hence becomes the owner of that, and know, and because it created or requested the creation of all these records, it knows about all those records. That's fine. Yeah. But there might be, you can imagine, also envision another microservice that doesn't know about all that, but needs to, you know, like a analysis, KPI analysis microservice that goes across different vendors, or
absolutely, that's the data lake, and I think what we came across there is that we still need to have an owner for each data tree that is stored, for each data tree that is stored in the CPS. But you need to ask for permission to get access to it, and that's how we solved the access control, somewhat the partitioning issues, and also safeguarded against a free-for-all in terms of a complete data lake. So you needed to ask, so however we decide to slice and dice, that overall use case would still need to understand who's responsible for, who owns that data. So that was...
So microservice two would go to microservice one, who created the records, and say...
Can I have access to your data?
Access to your data. But...
And he'd go to microservice three as well, because he needs to query across multiple types of data. So maybe he wanted to do a query that included both transport and radio access. So he'd have to talk to the radio access and the transport service and say, can I have access to your models? And then when he had been provided access to the models, we knew that this overarching analytics use case now has access to all the data. So we were aware of the coupling. So then if the transport guys decided to change something, or the radio access guys decided to change something, there was an explicit record that the analytics guy could be impacted.
I see. So there would be, okay, that's actually interesting to note. so you're envisioning basically there's some microservice that creates the that basically takes from SDC, the CSER package, creates the CMPS database records, and then becomes, and hence becomes the owner of those records.
Yeah, and in the high level design, that guy is the mirror. He's marked down as the mirror service.
Okay.
So he's the guy who, he or she is the guy who gets the model in its raw form and says, right, I'm the owner of this. I'm now going to give that to the model lifecycle interface on the CMPS.
Sorry, Tony, I lost you there. Who or what are you referring to now that becomes the mirror service?
It's one of the logical components in the hitch in the high level design for the POC. It's not in the scope.
Okay. Yes, separate new components. Yeah, separate new component. No, I thought you were saying that.
You need to be careful with the word component.
Okay.
Right. It's a library that is part of the logical configuration and persistency service. But okay. it is to be consistent with how we want to approach model handling, it is responsible for making sure that the CNPS is given the model in its raw form so it can process it.
Yeah, no, I misunderstood you. I thought some pre-existing component effectively became the mirror service. That's not what you meant. Okay. No.
So if we had another microservice that was the, let's say, just some analytics and correlation, say, microservice, and it wants to look across many domains and across
instances,
multiple vendor installations.
Yep.
Hence, it needs to know about and suppose we have a microservice that knows about Huawei's, Huawei and Ericsson and Nokia. So basically, you're saying that you're gonna need this other microservice, let's call it number four, I guess, for what's going off my computer here.
Okay. Yeah, MS2 is going to need to know, MS4, whatever, right. Is going to need to know about MS1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, okay. So it needs to ask for permission.
Access.
Just to even read?
Yes, because otherwise we are introducing coupling that we're not aware of. Which is very dangerous. I that was a very valid concern, and I think we've actually come up with a good solution. That you make explicit when you have a dependency on data. We do not want that dependency to be uncontrolled. We want to we accept that you need to have a dependency on data, but we want you to be explicit about it. We want you to say you have a dependency on data. So then if that data changes, we understand where the impacts are. We understand the parts of the system that need to be verified together, because as this grows, if you have a free-for-all access to all data, if you've got a complete data lake, then you really need to test everything because you've no idea what the side effects are as a result of changing some of the data.
Then I would say, how do you, suppose you have a microservice developed by, say, some service provider, I don't know, AT&T or something, and how does that microservice know that these microservices collectively represent all the RAN interested microservices? In other words, I could let me frame it in a different way. So you have a body of PNFs that are from all these different vendors, and with all of these different vendors, and you can imagine there's also optical and transport and RAN boxes. If I had just sort of free access, which is what I was sort of thinking about, if in that whole collective of records, I could just go through all the records and essentially find all of the RAN boxes that way.
Yeah. Having said that, just to bear with me.
Yeah.
If you do that, your implementation is already coupled to each of those different models. So if there's any variation in those vendors, you're coupled to them. So you already understand that they exist. So because you understand they exist, you should also understand that who owns them. So it's from an implementation perspective, it's not as onerous as you say. Now, if you want to be very model driven on this, you can also do this dynamically, and you can create a simple registration component that provides I am X and I have models that relate to A, B, and C. Or I own the models that relate to A, B, and C. So anytime a new component, maybe MS3A comes along for Nokia or I don't know, Ericsson, or it comes along and it says, well, I'm bringing these things in. I'm not taking ownership of them, or I'm introducing them, and I'm because this is a brand new type of model that has the same functional meaning as a different type of model, as a different vendor's model. I'm not publishing them because I'm registering, and that registration makes it available to something like the analytics process that's able to then go in and ask for permission to all of these things. Now,
so yeah,
I mean, that's just one mechanism to do that. But just to go back to your point that if you do have analytics code that is going to traverse across the data lake, which is a very powerful use case, and I agree with it, we should enable it. We just have to acknowledge that by doing so, it is itself. The code will be coupled to those models. And the only question is whether or not you make that visible. So if you have uncontrolled, unfettered access to the data lake, then it's extremely difficult to track and understand that, that relationship exists. Whereas if you have an explicit permission or granting of access, then you can actually make public, make visible the fact that a dependency exists.
I see the sort of benefit of microservice going to these other microservices and gaining access, but I also see the sort of need for, I'm not necessarily going to be aware of all the microservices I need to query, and how do I become aware of all those other microservices I need to query as a problem. So, or it may even be a data crawler that doesn't necessarily want to tie itself to any kind of microservice. So, but rather that it just has sort of read-only access.
Then I would definitely go for the registration mechanism so that you can, at runtime, query the registry and say, well, okay, what services exist that own data?
Yeah.
And then I can go and ask for read-only access.
That is a good idea. I like that idea a lot. So basically, so some microservice can query.
Basically, it would be like two services, right? One for register yourself, and a second to read from that register all the ones which are present.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So basically, if I understand right, microservice one, say an Ericsson service is going
call
to
call it Ericsson RAN, yeah.
RAN, yeah, okay. It's going to basically, you know, create a body of records of RAN related PNF records, let's say, and it owns them. So and then along comes some, you know,
MSX, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Some microservice, say British Telecom or whatever,
ET Analytics,
yeah. Service providers developed microservice that wants to get access to certain kinds of data, so this thing would then register. It would use this registration function to say I've created these set
to
of
publish,
records and I own them.
To publish the ownership, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, we shouldn't need to define some API.
Yeah, so basically I've created this set of records, I own them, and if you want access to them...
Come talk to me.
Come talk to me, yep.
Yeah.
Okay, and then basically, it could then search the registry, and
query say, crawl search. Yeah.
Yeah. search the registry and say, oh, I'm interested in, you know, all the RAN records.
And then he talks to MS-1 and say, may I have access?
Right. That's perfect. Okay. I like that solution. Okay. At least, you know, it works.
And then go directly to the data.
Right.
Once he's been granted access, then MS-1 falls out of the way. So you no longer have that extra hop. So it's all about finding access and setting up access. And then the performance shouldn't be an issue because you have direct access to the data. You don't want to be going multiple hops, and you don't want to be looking for translations. Mm. But I mean, that's what that guard prevents.
Yeah. Sure.
So
it prevents a run race conditions, and it's a sort of semaphore mechanism as well. So yeah. I assume there's also microservice can also essentially release access. I'm done with, I'm done using this.
You know. I'd imagine that would be the case primarily if it was granted write access.
Yeah. Right. Okay, great.
Because otherwise you're getting into transactions and things change, and I don't think we should be providing any guarantees about data changing for the folks who are reading, because that just brings in a whole bunch of complexity. I think it's best to manage expectations and say we're not going to give you a snapshot of this data.
Right, and I think if the CMPS software sets up the infrastructure to handle, you know, the basic registration, registry type indexing functions and so forth, then we can think of the cases and uses of that registry operations, such that microservices can interact with each other. Then I think we've done our job, right? So,
yep. Can you take this content and paste it into an issues/decisions page? Because I think this is really good.
Yeah.
I think this is really good stuff, and we need to put it in as one of those that we need to just, because I think we've pretty much done it just now, come to a conclusion and a decision, but it'd be nice to have it recorded.
Yeah,
And put into the design page.
Sure.
One question, this registry couldn't be used a registry where you're going to be used requesting it. Basically, when you register yourself, you say anyone which will want to have access to this data needs to call this. Basically, well, you want to be exposing the registry to the request.
You could automatically grant all read requests, for example.
Right. So you don't need to expose who is the owner. You don't care. Basically, you only request straight.
Yeah, you could automatically grant all read requests. I would hesitate to allow, in this, the automatic granting of write.
I wouldn't say grant. I would apply for a request. Basically, what you are exposing is that you are applying for get access.
Oh, yeah. That's what the query register. Yes. The request primarily should go to the owning service, though.
Right.
Just add a new row, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll create a page for it later.
So I view issue slogan brief. I mean, I view this as all of the resolution of the in the context of the 5G service use case. You know, the interaction and interactions.
And this is model access, model and data access.
Yeah.
Flows. It's model and data access flows for me, as from a generic perspective. Mm-hmm.
And that's issue 5, I think, right? So
it is issue 5, yeah. Yeah. Topic area 5.
Okay. And this is its own page.
Each one of these are a child page. Right. Yeah.
So I guess I would point this to the actual use case that I'm working on. So let me see. Copy link location here. Okay. Oops, did I insert that? No.
You did, yeah.
Nope, wait, oh. That didn't work. Let me see, hold on. There we go. Okay. There's probably a whole bunch of other decision things, but you know, one of the topics is creating a mechanism.
Registration discovery.
Yeah.
And we may be able to use. I mean, there's millions of registration and discovery mechanisms, so yeah. We should be able to reuse an existing ONAP component for that. We've yes. got to have one already.
Right.
It's just a question of making sure that we have the right metadata around each microservice.
Right. Okay. Interoperation is not a word, huh? Okay. All right. Medium agreed, priority. I don't know what you want to put this at. Maybe I'll just put it as medium. Okay.
Yep.
All right, great. So thank you. I didn't realize it was going to take so much time talking about this, but
that was a good discussion though.
Yeah, I was basically just kind of summarizing or trying to summarize what happened in the past couple of weeks. All right, so let's move on then. Let's see. So we talked about some of the 5G service modeling stuff, and my discussions with Jacqueline yesterday, so it also involves CMPS modeling. And then maybe we haven't talked about the architecture issues and discussions for a while. So maybe let's do that next. Do you want to take over, Tony?
I'm actually back a week, but I've been, as you know, well, maybe you don't know, I've been pretty busy. So the first couple of days were presentations, and then I had to catch up with other work that I was doing. So I haven't actually progressed anything in terms of configuration processes since we left. But I understand, Tuan, that you're ready to go ahead with the Yang parser discussion. There's a decision here.
Yeah, I haven't quite set it to ready to discuss yet, but I can give an update what my findings are so far, and maybe we can kind of start agreeing that we continue with this anyway. That we
this one
looking likely. You want me to present or?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, do please, Tuan.
Yeah. Okay. I'll just share my screen 1 second. Where's the option gone? Okay, I use a smaller screen for this. Let me click this button as well. I'll give you a second to catch up.
Yeah, and whenever you change screen, you have to remember not to talk for a minute.
See my screen.
At least for me, you were breaking up when the screen started to share.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, same here.
So as long as you give it a minute after you change screens, we're good, Tuan.
For at least a few
seconds. Okay, so this is the page that I've been working on, the existing Yang parser. So parsers are being used in ONAP, and eventually we concluded that it's mainly the called Yang tools is a library that was developed. I actually think it's developed long before Open Daylight, but it's been extended and probably put in the library for ODL. So that's what's been used at the moment in several projects already. So I've been setting up a little sample project basically and just trying things out, all the different young features, the language features that we need. I have been trying, as you can see here in the menu here, or in the, yeah, the structure of the table of content. All of these I've been trying out. So first of all, I focused on the actual parsing of the models, what exactly we get. So that's just an example there of the how what it looks like in Java. And then,
I'm sorry, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
Why don't you just use the PNG rendering into XML? Or the PNG rendering into, basically there's some textual form.
Sorry, I'm not sure what you're referring to.
So PNG is a standard Yang program, which is, I'm sorry, a Python program, which does a lot of things with Yang.
But and I think we are not using that. I think we are using the ODL or Yang parser, right?
Yep.
So basically this is Maven.
Well, but if you use a, right, you can actually get a textual representation rather than Java objects. And if you have a textual representation, then you...
yeah, we've talked about...
And so actually one of my concerns is...
Yeah, we did discuss this earlier. We had a bit of a discussion which... Sorry, go ahead.
So I suppose one of my concerns is... if you have a textual representation, if you actually have a quite literal map of what goes where, then it's actually possible to try to gracefully handle version changes. Whereas if you lock it into Java code, that becomes very, very difficult.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. Basically, what we want to do is... We're not going to store this information. It's mainly to be able to, through Java code, access the model, understand the model, and being able to things like validation and that kind of stuff. And we have discussions about upgrading models. So it's actually a different discussion point we haven't finalized yet, but that is part of the purpose of this POC as well, to show how we can handle model upgrades and how that will be stored. But we have some discussion in the past about language and different options, and we did kind of from an Ericsson point of view,
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. I can't quite.
Tuan, you've broken up to the point where nobody can hear you.
Because that's what we have. Skills that
we can follow. Sorry,
yeah, this is not.
Twain, can you hear us?
Okay, I'll stop sharing.
Okay, now it's better.
A little bit better, yeah.
Oh no,
he's still not really.
Yeah.
I think we lost his sharing. I think it dropped, and now he's actually stopping sharing on his own laptop, which hopefully will help his bandwidth. Not everybody has got the best bandwidth in the world.
Sorry, but no, it's still the same.
Tuan, you're going to have to dial back out and come back in again, I think. Yeah, he's dropped now.
Okay, all right. So
sorry, again, could you suppose what's your issue, what are your main constraint against using Yang? Or
no, it's not against using Yang. It's about the parser. So there's a very well-known and standard parser, PYang. And this will give you a variety of representations of the of the Yang model. One of which is that will convert it into XML, so you can play with it all that you want. But you know, the difficulty in working with Yang, the models themselves are fairly simple, if you ignore validation. But the difficulty is processing all the various kinds of weird inheritance that Yang defines. But Piang will also process all the inheritance, and it will come up with basically the tree, and it will produce this in a textual form.
So Ted, can you give me just a one sentence thing about Piang again? It's a tool for processing Yang models. Is that right?
A Python tool for processing Yang models. I thought it was pretty really quite standard.
Okay.
I remember.
It allows XYZ something something something.
Yeah. So
which are the benefits overall?
Yeah.
The ODL one, basically.
Well, so one benefit is that it'll convert it into XML so that you can perform your own processing on it. And that's something that I would do, but this is the kind of thing I do. But the problem, the real Yang itself describes a fairly simple data structure. It's really just a tree. But the real difficulty is performing all the kinds of, it's kind of like inheritance, you know.
You mean the augmentation, right?
Extending and augmentation, yeah.
Right, this augmentation. Yeah, we have huge, long experience with ODL Yang, so that's why.
Yeah, so, but the thing is, Piang will do this for you, and it will come up with a representation of what that tree is going to look like.
And I just think, Ted, if unfortunately Tuan's line broke up, but I think that's why he was evaluating the ODL Yang parser.
I'm actually back, Tony, now. Can you hear me okay?
Your sound is excellent. Just please don't share your screen.
Stop sharing screen.
The purpose of that story was to look at these things. And the first thing that we looked at was because it was recommended in several of the presentations.
Sorry, is this it? This Piang?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
So several of the presentations that we made so far on the configuration of persistency service had pointed us to look at the Open Daylight. So there was a Yang parser that was used inside the controllers, which turns out to be the Open Daylight Yang parser, which is Java language compliant. And I accept that Piang will do other things. But specifically, this evaluation is around what we needed to do in the CNPS in terms of, because we're writing this in Java, bringing a Yang model into Java primitives that would help us do the validation and navigation. And I think we should let Tuan present that. And if there is an alternative to that, we should look at it, absolutely. But neither do we want to get into an analysis paralysis.
Yeah, I just want to say that I do a fair amount of work on schema updates and schema modifications, and if you lock everything into Python, rather into Java, it becomes very very hard to compare version one of a schema against version two of a schema. But if you have it in a table that can be analyzed and cross-referenced, it's actually possible to do this. And if you do it the right way, you can have a Yang model, and you can serve it in both version 1 and version 2 at the same time.
Okay, so that's your main concern, the version management of the Yang models.
Of the Yang models or of the schemas in the database?
I think he doesn't like the way that's in Java. It's more difficult for him, to use the augmentation and extend it. But binding aware using it, I don't think it's going to be that difficult.
So there's augmentation to deal with a modification to say version
one.
Yeah,
I know. I'm totally familiar with that.
Is also the upgrade from version 1 to version 2.
Different things.
And if you maintain your schemas in the right way, you should be able to both ingest data in either version 1 or version 2, and then also serve it in either version 1 or version 2.
Okay, and when you say schemas, what schemas?
The Yang model. So the egg model is essentially defining a schema on this tree structured data.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, so
we do have to deal with how to upgrade data from schema version 1 to schema version 2 if we are storing any. We do have to discuss that and how it's done.
Maybe that should be a new topic, do you think?
Is already a topic.
Yeah, we have a topic on that already.
We just haven't got an analysis done on it yet. Upgrade of models.
Upgrade of
I can try to get some information from this. Basically, I can contact Robert, which is basically doing all the stuff related to Jank in ODL. Mm-hmm. So maybe
I think an important point we need to remind ourselves as well is that we're striving towards a schemaless way of storing this data. That's one of the starting points of this.
And that's on the database side.
Yeah.
So I'm not talking about the database side. I personally would tend to store it in a fairly well structured schema, but that's just an implementation choice. I'm talking about the Yang model. The Yang model defines a schema on this collection of little records that you're going to recombine into some tree structured data, whether it's represented in XML or JSON.
Which is, sorry, what the Young Tools library does as well. The ODL Young Tools library has all those components as well to convert.
Yeah, that's why I'm trying to find out why this.
Yep.
Wait
one second, guys. So, Toy, now that you're back, but you're having problems sharing. Do you want to try again, or should I go to a particular page you want to talk about?
Yeah, I just wanted to represent what I found so far, what the Young Tools library that's used in ODL is capable of. So that's what I wanted to present, which is in that page, that issues and decision page links to.
Okay, all right, let me go to that link, one second.
While we are going to that link, Theodore, because in our backlog at Dell, one of the tools that we wanted to look at along with ODL was Pyang also. But so if you have any example of Python code using Pyang, also we could have a look, and it could be interesting if you have any reference or documentation about it. Do you have some?
I'm sorry, you asking me?
As you were mentioning that you already made some work on it, do you have any reference or about Python services doing validation using Pyang?
I'm not doing validation using Pyang, but at the beginning of the year, I put together a proof of concept where I could store and retrieve Yang model instances based on some Yang model I was given into a relational database and extract it with a variety of APIs. Mm-hmm. And this was table driven. So you give me a table which describes what the various mappings are, basically how the tree is built. And then I had a particular kind of a database implementation, which is very schema dependent, but that's just an implementation choice, which was convenient for me. Mm-hmm. That's not the critical thing. The critical thing is I had a model, or rather a mapping table. I think you're calling them glorified maps or something, but a quite literal mapping table, which would say this particular field at this particular node is stored in a Java model instance, is stored in this particular record in this particular table.
Okay, I don't want to take your time, Tony, but if you have anything to share, Theodore, you can just share. Thank you.
Okay, so I think we are roughly here in Toyn's presentation. Did you want to continue?
There's only a couple of minutes left, so I would recommend people just to study this page in detail. Now, it is still a work in progress. I wasn't quite ready to present it yet, but I just want to see, I'll give you an idea of what I've been doing and where we are so far. So the purpose of this page is to, one, to evaluate does the existing Young parser give us everything we need for our POC and our project eventually. And I'm coming towards a conclusion, it definitely is. The main issue I found so far is a bit of lack of documentation, and that's why I'm actually also the second purpose of this page now is for developers, basically to help them get started using this Young Tools library, because it's quite a monster of a library, to be honest with you. And so this is giving some kind of overview and making sure that all the, if you scroll down a little bit, I go down, there's a table there that kind of, so this is just about types and also a bit about the API. Yeah, you can scroll down a bit further. Just keep going. Yeah, so there, and this is the table I'm working on now. There was a bit of a setback. I by accident started off with an older version 2 of this library, and then later realized, I thought I was working on version 5, but it turned out I wasn't because of a mistake in my POM file. And so I had to redo some work. It's actually quite active, this Young Tools parser. They're still extending it. But so basically I've been going to all the basic to the more advanced stuff, and just evaluating how the API, how the Java API exposes these Young constructs, and making sure that the information that we need from the Young model is available in a kind of a Java way to this parser. As I said, my current conclusion is, if anything, this is an overkill almost at what this library provides, but there's definitely no reason for us to reinvent this. And this will be a good starting point for our POC to use to process our model, also to process and validate the data. My last thing I kind of evaluated, and I think it's down the table a bit, is the validation that the JSON and the XML parser. So again, apart from parsing the models, it also can parse data back and forward. And my conclusion is that it has only very limited validation capabilities, which is fair enough because it's designed as a parser. So it's limited to a single field. So it can check the data type, the data ranges, that kind of stuff. But if there's any interaction, like a when statement, when you want to check something else, or even another example, something like unique, so where it has to check other data, the parser doesn't do that. It's only aware of one data element at a time as such. So
I would see the ambition for the configuration persistency service is that it does validate the data that is being put into it, because that allows for fast failure and avoids sugar in, sugar out if we do the validation. Right.
And continue.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. I'd like to see the configuration persistency service do as much validation as possible, but the syntactical range and conditional validation in compliance with the Yang models. I think it is an important consideration, important thing to know about what is.
Right, and if you don't have to mix two technologies for doing it, it's even better. It comes everything together in one tool, I would say.
Yes, and I'd like to see it done at that level, at the level of persistence.
I have a question, Toyn. Did you, when you tested, you were using Caraf, or what you were using?
No, I'm just using a very basic, I'm just using it as a library, and I'm parsing as a sample Young model that I'm modifying on the fly. So I don't have any system. Okay. I'm just using the library as it is and examining the output that I'm getting from the data, from the Java code.
Okay, because there is a small services open the Lighty, which is pretty good for, because it's a really version where you don't have Caraf, and you can use it specifically for microservice. And you can use annotation, you do any benefits you can have in microservice, don't require you to have Caraf, and it's all provided there. Basically, it's what ODL provides, but small packet.
Can you send on a link to that, Claudio? Maybe to this group.
I will do it. Because for RPC and validation, it's almost providing everything. So we might want to take a look at that.
So we are over time, guys. This is a really lively discussion. Maybe we start with this next time. So let me just put that in the... We'll start off with this Yang parser discussion next time. And Ted, did you maybe want to present something on PYang next time as well? Do you have any kind of... Or just maybe?
Yeah, I'll put together a little presentation on PYang and on the kind of a thing that I did with it.
Wonderful.
I probably did something too complicated with it, but there's easier ways to deal with it.
Great. Okay. So we'll can pick up next time on that, and we'll stop here. Okay. Everybody have a great weekend. Stay safe. And thank you,
Ben,
everybody for attending the call.
Okay. Thank you, Ben.
Bye.
Bye-bye.